Welcome. I'm Dr. Susan Blank. You're listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Today we wanted to talk about self-care and the role in preparing and taking care of ourselves during the upcoming busy holiday season. But before we get into that and I introduce my special guest, I'd like to remind everyone that this Thursday, always the third Thursday in November, is the Great American Smokeout. This is an opportunity for people around the world to take a look at their addiction to nicotine and to make an attempt to put down the cigarette even for one day. About 42 million Americans still smoke cigarettes and use tobacco, and it remains the single largest cause of preventable death, not just in North America, but around the world. So many problems, both physical, social, and emotional, are related to the addiction to nicotine. And just stopping smoking for that one day can be the first step in not only improving your health, but potentially even saving your life. So if you'd like more information about how to quit smoking, how to use our new smoke balm, which is a topical application of nicotine, we worked with Integrative Pharmacy, Compounding Pharmacy, Integrity. I said that wrong, didn't I? Integrity Compounding Pharmacy to create a new product called Smoke Balm, which is a way to help reduce cravings almost instantly in a very discreet way and a way that will help prevent the continued oral association with the use of nicotine or other tobacco products. So if you'd like more information about how to stop smoking or how to use the smoke balm, please call us at the Atlanta Healing Center at 770-696-9862. And please take the opportunity to make that first step by joining America in the Great American Smokeout this Thursday, the third Thursday of November. I'd like to welcome today our special guest, a dear friend and colleague, Alice Wellens. Alice is a licensed clinical social worker. She has a private practice in the Virginia Highlands area of Atlanta. She specializes in work with individuals, with couples, and with families. A general focus in many instances, but she also has a great talent and a special interest in working with people who are suffering with the disease of addiction and with their families. So it's a pleasure to welcome you here today, Alice, and thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's the highlight of my year when I get to come in and be on the show.
Well, we love having you. And if you're interested in learning more about Alice's practice, you can go to her website. Now, she spells Alice a little differently, so this will help you remember. Her website is www.alice.com. That's alicewellens.com, and you'll have all sorts of information about her practice and how to contact her for further information or help and support. So I love this idea about self-care for the holidays.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that idea? What brings this to your mind?
Well, probably like you and all of us in the mental health field, starting around October, you really start to hear clients and colleagues and friends starting to talk about the holidays. And, you know, the holidays can be wonderful and fun and special and memorable. And for a lot of people, they can have a lot of heaviness to them for lots of different reasons. So I noticed in my practice over the years that starting in around October, you just start to hear clients starting to talk about getting ready to go home for the holidays and working on strategizing from a variety of things, from how they're going to take care of their recovery to how they're going to deal with some old family of origin issues and everything in between. So thought it's always good to talk about this time of year.
I really agree. And I think that for many of our listeners, they can very much relate to what you've just said about the issues related to recovery and family and health and healing. But I think it's important for all of us to think about the idea that even if you are looking forward to the holidays and it's a joyous time in your life, the fact that you are increasing your stress by making changes. Our stress hormone cortisol responds to our need to make changes. When we're getting ready for holidays and we're traveling, so we're going to be sleeping in a different bed, we're going to be eating different food, we're going to be staying up later or sleeping in later. Even that can throw off our biorhythms. Those kinds of things generate for us stress that can be anywhere from a little bit of difficulty with sleeping all the way up to things like heart attacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, stress can kill you. And so it's not whether it's good stress or good happy feelings or bad feelings. It's part of the stress is just doing things differently. Mm-hmm. But there are some ways, and you're an expert in this, ways in which people can begin to identify and then cope with the stress of the holidays and keep that self-care in mind.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things that the program of AA uses is an acronym HALT, Hungry, Angry, Lonely, Tired. And so even if you don't have some overarching issues going mm-hmm. into the holidays, like you said, you're going to be off your schedule.
Right.
And so you're going to, even if it's adding more parties in and more dinners with friends, you're going to be off your schedule. So it's really important. What is it they say in medicine? If you hear hoof prints, hoofs don't look for zebras.
Right. If you hear hoof beats, look for horses, not zebras.
Yeah. You don't have to do things radically. It's really looking back to the basics. And so HALT can be a really great thing to ground you. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. So finding ways to make sure you address those areas to kind of keep you mm-hmm. stabilized and keep you grounded as we move through the next 6 to 8 weeks. And that becomes then the conversation. You know, that can be part of your own conversation or your therapy conversation. What can I do for myself in each of those areas?
I think that's such an interesting word and interesting an acronym that it really does identify what happens to people during the holidays mm-hmm. because we are so busy that often we don't take time to eat, we mm-hmm. skip meals, we're eating things that are not necessarily of a high nutritional value.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Dr. Blank.
Sometimes it's as simple as you need to just eat some decent food, have some water,
mm-hmm. get to bed.
Angry, sometimes we're frustrated. We've got more to do than we can possibly do, and we're not maybe doing things in the way that we'd like them to be. So we get angry. We talk in 12-step recovery about resentments. Mm-hmm. So we say yes when we really should be saying no. Mm-hmm. And then underneath that begins to build this resentment and this anger.
Right.
The loneliness piece, and I think that maybe we should need to spend a little time about that, because there's a difference between being with or without people and being lonely.
Right, right. And when people start to talk about lonely, you know, they talk about there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. And so kind of talking more about that is probably what you're indicating,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
People often have this idea of Norman Rockwell, you know, Thanksgiving dinner, where everybody's sitting around the table and has this benevolent, loving face, and the food is perfect and done right on time, right. And everybody else has this kind of family. Everybody else has these kinds of relationships,
right.
And I don't.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to kind of focus in on. So, you know, a lot of times when you're in your normal everyday life, you can keep things at a distance. You know, you can keep certain truths about your family or memories kind of off in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
But when the holidays come, it kind of forces all of that up to the surface, and you really have to take a look at things mm-hmm. that in your normal day-in, day-out life, you can keep off to the sides. And sometimes those things are painful. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. it's realizations that your family really doesn't function as well as you'd like it to, or that some really painful things happened in your childhood, or you're missing some people that aren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be anything. Or that you're different now. You might be in recovery,
mm-hmm.
and that changes how you're going to be in your family. It might be changing how your family's interacting with you. So the way you can operate in your day-in, day-out life can be one way, but the holidays come, and it really starts to ask you to look at these things that maybe sometimes we do a pretty good job at tucking aside.
Mm-hmm.
And that can bring up feelings of loneliness. You feel different. You feel shame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with my family. Everybody else's family is normal. And that even makes you feel more alone. So one of the best things that you can do, you know, I love Brené Brown's whole kind of overarching theory around we're wired for connection,
mm-hmm.
and shame is something that isolates you. And so one thing to do is just to talk to somebody about this, and it immediately just starts to decrease
mm-hmm.
your shame, increase connection, because the first thing they're probably going to do is tell you their story too. And then you don't feel so
mm-hmm.
alone. And then you don't feel like you're the only person with these issues, you know, coming up. So
I think that's so important, because many folks, particularly people in early recovery, mm-hmm. and they're going home or families coming for the holidays. I talk to many of my patients, and they're very concerned about how the family's going to react to them and what the family's going to ask them and how they're going to explain
mm-hmm.
why they had to drop out of school or why they're not working or
right.
why they had to move back home, not realizing that the questions that people are asking are not necessarily accusations. I've had this discussion over and over again recently
yeah.
that someone saying, well, what's happening
on?
With school
yeah.
isn't necessarily a shake your finger
mm-hmm.
shame. And sometimes, like you say, I needed to take some time off for some health reasons
mm-hmm.
may often elicit from someone else, well, you know, I had to do that very
mm-hmm.
same thing. I was sick. I got mono. And so you have a way to make a new connection
yeah.
as opposed to the first automatic response for most of our folks early in recovery and sometimes later is a sense of shame.
Right.
That if somebody's saying, well, why aren't you working? They're not saying, you lazy bum.
Right.
They're saying, why aren't you working? And that's an innocent question out of care and concern, not
right.
an accusation of failure.
Right.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about HALT and other ways in which we can self-care over the holidays. Thanks for listening.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards right here every Thursday morning at 9 with me, your hostess, Pat Rulo. Or listen to my podcasts at americaswebradio.com.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. This is Detailing Addiction, and today we're talking about self-care during the holidays. And my guest is Alice Willens, an excellent therapist here in Atlanta in the Virginia Highlands area. Again, if you want to know more about her practice or make contact and maybe come and see her, you can go to her website, www.alicewellens.com. That's AlyceWellens.com. We will be repeating that in the next section, so if you want to get your paper and pencil ready to write that down, I'll give you that information, because I think it's important. She's got some good information on her website. Right before the break, we were talking about this sense of being lonely, about being different, and the difficulty. And David Donaldson reminded me of an interesting quote that Virginia Satir, who's a brilliant writer about relationships, said that when we're children, feelings are facts, that whatever we're feeling is absolutely true, and we act on that. Of course, as we get older, we know feelings are feelings, and they don't necessarily have anything to do with facts. But when we end up back home for the Thanksgiving holiday, so many of us go back to our childhood feelings, our childhood place, and our childhood relationships, and we get back into that feelings are facts.
Yeah.
It's a scary place, and it happens automatically. It's not as though it's a conscious process many times, but I know you have some techniques around looking at that.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you go back home and you get into your family system, and sometimes within hours, sometimes within days, I kind of have read somewhere that there's a 72-hour rule, but everybody assumes their positions mm-hmm. and goes back into this dynamic. And so you can have somebody who is, you know, a respected physician, therapist, person in their community, you know, responsible, professional, and they go home and they are immediately like right back into some sort of age range.
Mm-hmm.
And
that isn't their current.
It's not their current best coping. And it's, you know, they've just lost. The neuro people talk about they immediately just go offline from their prefrontal cortex and their executive functioning mm-hmm. and their ability to kind of abstract critical think through things, and you're just acting and reacting, and everybody's in it, and you know, and that's what you see a lot in January is people coming home and just mm-hmm. having to kind of go through all of that again and process it and kind of integrate back into their mm-hmm. adult parts. So yeah, one of the things that I like to use in my practice for a lot of things is that there's a mindfulness technique called RAIN, R-A-I-N. And it can really help you have that pause between action and reaction. And as Viktor Frankl says, in the pause is where we have our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so RAIN, R, is to recognize. So it immediately creates an observing self. So you have mm-hmm. this meta-awareness, awareness of awareness. So you recognize what's happening. And then you allow it, A is allow it to be just as it is. And then I is investigate it. And that's where you can really start to do some of that. Feelings aren't facts.
Mm-hmm.
It might be real, but is it true?
Mm-hmm.
Is another really good one to ask yourself. So these things are really happening. You're really mm-hmm. feeling these feelings, but are they true?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so that's a way to kind of help you out of some of those old embedded patterns. And then N is for non-attachment or non-judgment. So not buying into what's happening and then acting as if, but allowing it to kind of be just as it is. And that can maybe help you kind of make some different decisions or at least just accept what's happening without having to be in it.
So if you're that person going home, newly in recovery,
mm-hmm.
and family members are wanting to know, they're asking you that question, how's school or how's work? Because as we were talking at the break, if you haven't seen people for a while, there are not a lot of questions.
Right.
There
are three or four main things you're going to get asked over and over and
right.
over.
Right. Yeah. Because everybody feels these are safe topics, and often they're interested in what's happening in your life. So they're
right.
going to ask, how's your work? How's school? What's going on in your relationship?
Right.
How's your health? All of those kinds of things are pretty normal conversations, but make our patients really uncomfortable.
Right.
So someone says, how's school going? And you've dropped out of school because you were arrested and you now have to go to rehab and you've been working a program of recovery, but things aren't 100% back on track and you're not in school, you're not working, you're having to concentrate really hard on your recovery, that question sets off all sorts of feelings and emotions
yeah.
and fears in a person when the other person may be asking very innocently and just a real kind of, I want to connect with you question, not an accusatory, shaming question.
Right.
So how might that unravel, or how RAIN might help them bring that back around?
Well, first I want to say a couple of things about that, because I can't not say a couple of things about that. So one is we really have to also remember to work with our patients around education about their disease.
Right.
So helping them remember that this is a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they were taking a semester off school to deal with kind of an out-of-control diabetes
mm-hmm.
or
cancer.
Some cancer
mm-hmm.
or something, then they would probably, with much less ease, much less shame is really what it all boils down to, be able to talk about that. They might have a lot of feelings around it, but not defensiveness probably.
Right.
And what are they defending? They're defending the feeling that there's something wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so shame is a barrier to from everything from recovery to research dollars. And so it's just another way to help people, if they are in a place where they can do that, to stand outside of the shame mm-hmm. part of this disease. And that, in a way, is such a big piece of just having integrity around their recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a voice that echoes out, you know, to the millions and millions of people in the United States that struggle with this disease. So I just feel like that moment is so profound in so many ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many ways. So sometimes people can access those more highly functioning parts of themselves, and sometimes they can't. And so helping them come up with some things that they can mm-hmm. say at that moment, and also helping them kind of discern who are safe people and who might who are some maybe safe people. They'll have to check it out when they get there, and who are probably not safe people, and just having different things that they want to share with different people. That's one way. Another is to really have a sense of planning around these events. So, you know, that you plan on how long you're going to stay, when you're going to leave, who your ride's going to be, kind of a buddy while you're there, a safe person.
Escape plan.
An escape plan if things are really going wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people talk about bookend events like this with meetings or texting your sponsor or your favorite reading, you know, in the car, having something that's very nurturing and soothing to you, because these events are even though we already know they're going to be hard, sometimes they're harder than we think when we actually get in them. But rain is helpful because the first one is to recognize what's happening, and that immediately gets you out of that reactive place and helps you recognize this person is just standing here asking me a question. And probably this person cares about me, mm-hmm. or is just trying to make polite Christmas afternoon conversation. And I can access this other part of me that wants to respond mm-hmm. to something, to make a connection here. So recognize.
Recognize. Right.
Recognize
what's
happening.
Put it into perspective.
And also, you know, trust your own wisdom. You know, who's safe and who's not safe.
Right.
It's not black and white. It's not all or nothing. It's mm-hmm. not a generalization of everybody's out to get you. And so the less shame you feel about yourself, the mm-hmm. more resources you have to kind of interact with people.
So I think that is a really, really positive thing. And I like the idea of giving the person some practice, either literally role play or at least some suggestions around a way to answer those kinds of questions
yeah.
that might be awkward and might not be asked by someone that you feel safe or you want to get into it.
Right.
To also recognize the difference between someone asking, "How are you?" which is a form of a greeting, mm-hmm. like, "Oh, I'm fine, how are you?" Mm-hmm. versus, "How are you?"
Right.
Which is, I really want to know, are you okay? And
right.
looking for a bigger answer. So I've seen sometimes some of my patients feeling all of this shame and guilt and wanting to just, someone ask them how they are and they want to give the whole story
right.
instead of, "Oh, I'm doing really quite well. I feel
yeah.
I'm really glad to be here. How are you doing?" And put
right.
it right back
right.
on the other person rather than feeling like they're under the spotlight being interrogated and that they have to give soup to nuts the whole story about what's been going on.
The gory details. And that's a really good point on the flip side, because with most medical conditions that are pretty extreme, like addiction is, you can become really sort of self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can kind of become an identified patient, and your perspective can kind of narrow. So you're going to walk into a holiday gathering or walk into your, you know, kind of family gathering and feel like everybody is just getting ready to corner you and wants to ask you. Well, they're not, you know.
Right.
they're thinking about their own stuff and their own little secrets and their own issues and their own internal worlds and dramas that they have going on. So it's helpful to just try to recognize,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is actually going on here. The other thing is that when we're in our shame place, and we're feeling defensive and attacked, you know, our central nervous system is reading that as danger.
Right.
And it throws us into our sympathetic nervous system response. And the first thing that happens when we go into our sympathetic nervous system response is language goes offline.
Right.
Especially the neural networks from the outside in, our prefrontal cortex, down to our kind of sympathetic nervous system life. And so we just start kind of responding, you know, like we're under attack. And so to remind people at that moment, recognize what's happening and find ways that you re-engage with your parasympathetic nervous system, that you engage with yourself that knows it's not under attack. And have a few little things that you know work for you. Some of the basics are take a deep breath,
mm-hmm.
smile, things like that.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about other self-soothing techniques. Thanks for listening.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Dr. George. Join me on Wednesday mornings from 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock when we talk about more than medicine. It's now about staying healthy, but it's about the strategy to do so. Join me on Medicine on Call.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Susan Blank, and this is Detailing Addiction. Today, my guest is Alice Wellens. She's a licensed clinical social worker in private practice here in Atlanta. She sees individuals, couples, and families around a variety of issues, but with a special interest in recovery and folks who suffer with the disease of addiction and codependency. We're talking today about self-care over the holidays and ways to really begin to put things in perspective, and I like this concept of RAIN, where people need to be aware of the things they're concerned about, and they need to be aware of some ways to help self-soothe and ground themselves. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the parasympathetic nervous system, and I think it's important for people to know that we have three nervous systems. We have the parasympathetic, our rest and digest, or feed and breed, I think is the way some people refer to it.
I've never heard that. I like that.
So that is the calm. That is, if you think about if you're resting, if you're digesting your food, mm-hmm. then that's a calm, relaxed state in physiologically and psychologically. There's the sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight or flight. That is the part of our brain that is our burglar alarm system that's constantly trying to make sure that we're safe mm-hmm. and helping us to react and to keep ourselves safe. And these two nervous systems are really not in our voluntary control. We are hardwired to, regardless of how interesting, what we're doing, what we're thinking, what we're saying, we're hardwired that if there is an emergency, if something feels threatening, that part of our brain, our sympathetic nervous system, takes over. It is in charge. And as you said, everything else goes offline. Our executive function, everything else steps aside because we've got to be safe. And those two nervous systems they usually work in sync, but we do have some ability to invite the parasympathetic nervous system to calm down the sympathetic nervous system if we're really not in danger.
Yeah. The sympathetic nervous system is really a good thing because
Absolutely.
It's responsible for survival of the species. You know, we wouldn't be here if somebody wasn't vigilantly watching for the lion to come over the Serengeti. So, and even before that. So, yeah, so when you have addiction, one of the, if we're going to, you know, go with that addiction is a medical condition, which it mm-hmm. is, and we know that, then we really need to talk about it in terms like that as well. And again, that's shame reducing, and it helps clients and us feel empowered that, okay, there are some things we can actually do to help influence mm-hmm. our physiological bodies.
Right.
Which also influences our emotional responses. And so going home for the holidays can certainly trigger, can heighten that sympathetic nervous system. Your central nervous system is reading danger, even though you might not even be consciously aware of
Exactly.
it. So you might start to see really small things. Your sleep might start to get disturbed. You might start to do some old things you haven't done in a while. Maybe a little overspending, biting your nails, eating something you hadn't normally eaten. But it kind of gets lost because it's the holidays. So things are all starting to go off sync. One of my favorite things I like to think about when I think about relapse, which is high during the holidays, it's high right after the holidays.
Right.
Because most people can hang on through the holidays, but then they're wrecked. You know, mm-hmm. their nervous systems are wrecked. Their coping skills are gone. They've held on as long as they can.
The 72 hours. They've made it through that.
They got home, and that was it. So is Terence Gorski's work. He's one of the first people that started talking about the concept that relapse ends with using. It's not the beginning of the relapse. That's the end of the relapse. And so to really help people think about what are your relapse behaviors, what are the things that show up long before a relapse happens. And part of that is weaving in looking at your sympathetic nervous system response and your parasympathetic nervous system response and learning those cues and behaviors and when they show up and how they show up and what makes them show up mm-hmm. and what to do about them. I don't know if that's where you were going with that.
No, I think that's absolutely. I think that's absolutely true. And the, you know, we do want that sympathetic nervous system to be there, and thank goodness it is. I think that at this time of year, particularly with some of the terroristic events mm-hmm. that have happened, and I'm thinking about the incidents. The occurrences in Paris mm-hmm. and what that has been like for people. And certainly if you watched any of the news feeds of the people running mm-hmm. and hanging off buildings and carrying their friends or strangers to safety, you see the value of the sympathetic nervous system.
Excellent point.
That they were really in need of that, and they were very much protected in many ways because they were either going to run and hide or stay and fight.
Right.
And so they have that. When you think about traveling, and as you say, we're in a different place. So you're walking along, you're not sure where you're going. Your sympathetic nervous system revs up a little bit. Well, I don't know where I'm going. Is this the right street? And am I feeling okay? That increased energy, that increased anxiety is protective to a point, mm-hmm. but can really signal to people, I'm not okay, and I need something to help me with that. And very often, it's not the good techniques that you're going to share with us. It's, I need a smoke, I need a drink, I need a hit, I need to act out in some way to relieve. I know what takes this feeling away from me.
Right.
And I think people are going to be even more revved up over the next few weeks with traveling, and am I safe, and is my family safe, and do I need to change my plans? We're going to even see a more heightened level of awareness, which is not all bad, but this is also, I think, going to even add to the potential that people can relapse, that people can overreact overreact isn't the right word, but they're so hypervigilant and uncomfortable physically that they need relief, and unfortunately they know what gives them relief really fast.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talk to people who are in recovery and they are telling their stories, one of the common threads in that is that they look back and their using was always around trying to, in their words, would probably be to make themselves feel better. But, you know, the bigger concept would be they're trying to regulate their central nervous system.
Exactly.
Something doesn't feel right. They don't know how to, they don't have skills to help make themselves feel better.
And or even an understanding.
Or even an understanding that that's what's happening.
Or that they can do something different.
Right. And so they use, and you'll hear people say, I took that drink or I had that bar of Xanax or whatever it is, and I immediately felt better. So, you know, I tell people, you know, you were trying to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to keep up that concept. We just want to try some different things. So it really does all weave together. And so people go home, and again, you're in your day in and day out life, and you've kind of got it figured out with your recovery, but you go home and it's different triggers, and they're older triggers, and they might be triggers that you hadn't thought of in a long time or you haven't dealt with yet in therapy. And so all of a sudden you don't have your normal coping skills available to you, or you're not really sure what's happening. And so, right, it's a real setup for a relapse or just trying to make yourself feel better, you know, trying to regulate that central nervous system. When people ask me how would you boil down what is therapy? One of the answers I always give is it's to make what's unconscious conscious and what's intolerable tolerable. And it takes a lot of hours of conversation to bring all that together into each person's story.
And just talking about it, that whole idea of how does therapy work? How does that help? Therapy is a physiological brain process that identifying the feeling that amygdala, our burglar alarm system, and our hippocampus, our memory alarm system, if we stay spinning there, we've lost our words, we've lost our good judgment, we've lost our ability to make decisions. We're just spinning and we're going to make it worse. When you put words to the feelings, not
recognize.
Right, recognize, thank you. Not just say, oh, I'm okay.
Yeah.
No, recognize, I'm afraid.
I'm feeling this.
Yeah. I'm feeling scared, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling lonely. That moves that energy to the temporal lobes, which is our feeling part of our brain, and then up to our prefrontal cortex, which is our planning, our judgment, our reasonable, rational part of our brain. So that process of speaking aloud our fears helps us to access a part of our brain that can make a difference. And in that process, it's not that necessarily you're going to hear great words of wisdom, although they will hear that from you,
absolutely.
Of course. But it's that process of speaking that aloud. Now you can access the part of your brain physiologically that will allow you to put that into perspective, to assess it, to integrate it, to understand it, and to figure out other ways of taking care of the problem.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting process that seems so simple, and it is, but it's very important. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of those techniques to help us calm ourselves and self-soothe. Thanks so much. We'll be right back.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction, or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is Daryl Pullis inviting you to listen to America's Homegrown Veggie Show right here every Saturday morning at 10 Eastern Time. Great guests, great tips, and valuable information about growing your own vegetables, fruits, and herbs.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back, and thanks for listening to Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. I'm very grateful to have Alice Wellens today, and we were just talking during the break that this has gone way too fast, and we're going to have to do this more than once a year, Alice. You've got to come back more frequently because you have such great insight and wonderful practical tips to help people really deal with these times of discomfort and times of change. Doesn't even have to be discomfort, but just the stress of travel, having people there, changing schedule can be very disruptive and can trigger some, you know, bad feelings, some physical illnesses, mm-hmm. and eventually for some people even a relapse. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to avoid some of these difficult feelings, and how can we manage our mood and keep that sympathetic nervous system tamped down a little bit and increase our parasympathetic action?
Yeah, those are great questions, and that's really the conversation to be having with your therapist, with your sponsor, with your friends, with yourself. To start to really outline what are the behaviors that are going to start to show up for me around giving me a cue that I'm starting to kind of, you know, clients like to use the term get squirrely. I'm right. starting to get squirrely.
Unravel, yes.
I'm starting to unravel. My sympathetic nervous system is starting to have some reactions. You know, what are those? And the typical ones are the hungry, angry, lonely, tired.
I think that's brilliant.
So that gives you a broad brushstroke. So start looking for that. Are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? What are the things that you know work for you in addressing each of those things? What I know for myself, it's around hungry, and I'll start getting really irritable and frustrated, and I'll have a shorter fuse, and my family members don't hesitate to ask me if if we need to pull off and get something to eat, which makes me even madder,
right, of
which
course.
Is really a cue to me that I need to pull over and
right.
get something to eat.
Right. And it's a shame that they recognize it well before you recognize
right.
it. Yes. I hate that.
And you know, that's a really good example because I really then try to laugh about that because I've recognized it. My family member has kind of helped me with it a little bit, and that I let that be something then we can laugh about. Haven't always been able to laugh about it, but we do try to. So using hungry, angry, lonely, tired as a broad brushstroke, and you start filling in the blanks. What can I do when I'm hungry? Okay. Well, when you're at home or when you're traveling, just try to have some easy go-to foods available to you. If you're out of town, try to run to the grocery store and pick up your normal things that you know are going to just help you move through those moments. Angry, you know, what are some things that you know work for you when you get angry? And that's a conversation you would be having with your therapist or your sponsor.
Right.
Lonely, who are some people that you know you can reach out to or text? A lot of times if you're traveling, you might stop your daily interactions with people, so you want to make sure to keep that up.
Mm-hmm.
And then tired, you know, rest where you can. Mm-hmm. Exercise, which maybe doesn't sound like it's an antidote to being tired, but it really is a very helpful thing. And it's also helpful in regulating the central nervous system, which is really overall what we're trying to be doing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the main thing that I would be thinking about. And that's not just for people in recovery. That's for all
people. For all of us.
Yeah.
And I think particularly around Thanksgiving, one of the antidotes, so to speak, to anger for a lot of people is a list of gratitude.
Oh, great.
And the thankfulness that you have, the things that you are grateful for, can help you put into perspective somebody pulling out in front of me or snatching up that sweater on Black Friday that I really wanted to buy.
Right.
How does that really stack up with the fact that I have my freedom, that I have my health, that I have people who care about me?
Yeah.
And doing the gratitude appropriate for Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
Should be about gratitude. And
brilliant.
That's a nice antidote.
Yeah. And it's fascinating what the research shows happens to the nervous system when we start engaging in gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a very, very powerful tool. So I'm really glad that you remembered that. Yeah.
So exercise is good. I know that you incorporate some yoga postures, some meditation, and there are some easy things that people can do to engage their parasympathetic nervous system to help them if they're having these moments that their sympathetic nervous system appears to be winning.
Right. Yeah. One of my favorites that you can do anywhere, even in a closet, is incorporates everything we're talking about. Shame reduction, regulating your central nervous system. It's good for you physically. It has a spiritual benefit. It incorporates mindfulness. It's sort of like the integration of everything is legs up the wall. So legs up the wall. You can go on my website. I have, or my Facebook page, which is Alice Wellens, LCSW. But I have lots of links to use of legs up the wall for anxiety, depression, and stress. There are lots of other poses, but this is a go-to. And basically, you just put your legs up the wall, scoot yourself as close as you can to the wall, and you can make yourself more comfortable by putting a bolster or a blanket under your hips. You can even put a blanket over you, arms in a T-shape, and then turn on your favorite 5 or 10 minute meditation or even just music.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use Tara Brach. She has a 10-minute meditation on her website, TaraBrach.com. It's called Gateway to Presence. So if you have a smartphone or a computer, you can turn on Gateway to Presence, do that 10-minute legs up the wall, and that will reset you. It really will. So that's a big tool. And, of course, brain that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm. Such important practical things, mm-hmm. because I think that's what people are looking for. They usually in early recovery begin to recognize mm-hmm. some of the feelings
yeah.
that they've been numbing for a while. But what do I do with this? And what are some easy things? And so if you think about if you're laying on your back with your feet up the wall, that is not a defensive posture.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a sympathetic nervous system.
Right.
You have to be allowing yourself to really be open, to really be relaxed.
Yeah.
And that is so important with the breathing and the meditation or the music that can take your mind. And actually, we've seen that when we do EEG, when we do neurofeedback, for example, if you play music, particularly classical music, which is really interesting to me. You play classical music and you see the brain waves began to react in time with the music.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. It really is. And, you know, people ask you and me all the time, what is the real core stuff for addiction work? What's actually the trauma work? And that is exactly doing the work. When we hear people all the time say, what's doing the work? That would be doing the work, recognizing that it's going to be a long day or you've had a long day, and what are the things you can do for self-care / regulate your central nervous system / do your recovery work, trauma work, however you want to name it, and treating a medical condition.
Exactly.
And to me, that is just one of the classic, integrating all the aspects and doing that for yourself. Exercise, a walk around the block. Walking a mile is 2,000 steps, for those of you who are tracking yourself.
With your Fitbit.
With your Fitbit or your Jawbone. 1 mile is roughly 2,000 steps. And what happens physiologically when you walk 1 mile or even around the block is everything that we've been talking about. It really resets that central nervous system. Another thing, some quickies, are smiling. But it can't be fake because your brain knows the difference. So smiling, laughing, that immediately engages the parasympathetic mm-hmm. nervous system, because you can't be under attack if you're smiling and laughing. And also singing. Singing lights up. So language is in two areas of the brain, but singing is all over the brain. So mm-hmm. the neural networks for singing mm-hmm. are really super strong. And that's why we remember things with songs so strongly in periods of time in our lives. But it also immediately engages the parasympathetic nervous system and can kind of bring us back down really quick. And those are fun things to do, too.
And they don't cost money.
And they're free. You can do them anywhere.
They don't take a lot of time. Yeah. You don't necessarily need a lot of special equipment. But the thing you need to do is remember to do those things and to work that into your daily schedule, yeah. regardless of whether you have the disease of addiction or trauma yeah. or it's a healthy lifestyle. When yeah. we talk about wellness, when we talk about trying to bring our bodies back into harmony, those are the things mm-hmm. that really can take mm-hmm. years off our stress, add years to our life, make yeah. us look younger, make us feel happier, help us sleep better, have better relationships, mm-hmm. are these simple kinds of self-awareness, being in the moment and doing the things that we need to do to be grateful and to be happy in our moment. So yeah. thank you so much,
thank
Alice,
you
for being here.
Me.
Again, alicewellens.com. You can learn more about her practice. We wish you all a very safe holiday season, and remember to take care of yourself. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Detailing Addiction.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.